Hello and welcome to the Displaced African podcast. The Displaced African is the African immigrant's personal development blog. It can be found at www.thedisplacedafrican.com. Hello everyone, this is Mwangi here. Before we get into the interview, what I thought I would do is I'd record this brief introduction letting you know who David Kobia is. Initially, I wanted to do this as part of the interview, but I realized it was so long that it would take time away from the interview, so I thought, let me record this separately. So David Kobia, and Kobia is spelled K-O-B-A-I, is one of the most successful internet entrepreneurs that Africa has ever had to offer. He's the founder of one of the largest forum sites in Kenya, Mashada.com. He is the co-creator of Ushahidi.com, together with Eric from WhiteAfrican.com, Juliana from AfroMusing.com, and Ori from KenyanPundit.com. And Ushahidi developed out of a need to find out what was going on in Kenya during the post-election violence that started in late 2007. And it was basically a service where people could SMS in details as to what was going on the ground, violent incidents and things of that nature, and that'd be put up on a Google map and people would know what was going on. Since then, Ushahidi has expanded to mapping the xenophobic attacks that took place in South Africa. They were using it for the relief efforts there. Ushahidi also was embraced by Silicon Valley. They went to the NetSquare Challenge where they won a $25,000 check together with Eric. And they also rubbed shoulders with guys like the founder of WordPress. He's also the founder of Kobia Interactive, where, among other services, he provides search engine optimization, article marketing, website design, and you can find that at www.kobia.net. He's been featured in international media from the Daily Nation in Kenya to the BBC. He's the founder of the custom clothing website AfricanTees.com, which can be found at AfricanTees.com, and there he custom designs t-shirts, and you can also submit some designs of African t-shirts and African designs that you want to see. And you can find him on his personal blog, The DK Factor, which can be found at www.dkfactor.com. And to top it all off, the man even has his own soccer team. So I hope I have you hooked enough to want to learn more about this great guy. And with that, let me introduce David.
So how are you?
I'm very good, Aslux.
Okay, so I'm here with David Kobia, and just to begin with, David, please tell us a bit about your background before you became an immigrant.
Okay, I mean, of course, you know, I'm a Kenyan. I started out at University of Nairobi, and before I came to the U.S., I was actually taking mechanical engineering. And of course, I came here and switched to computer science, so...
Did you finish mechanical engineering?
No. I, to be honest with you, I didn't like it.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's one of those situations. You know how Kenya is. You're forced to, you know, maybe the plan was to do something else, but you end up doing something else, you know?
Yeah. The parents are the ones who really wanted you to do mechanical engineering.
Well, you know, to be honest with you, I really wanted to do architecture, but... you know, again, just the way the system is, you find yourself in kind of an out spot. You can't really make choices.
Okay.
Because things are limited. So.
Okay. So how many years were you into the course before you immigrated over?
It was a year.
So after the first year, you decided, to hell with this, I'm going to the States to do computer science.
Well, I wouldn't say it was a to hell with it moment. It was more of an opportunity presented itself. And here we are.
How did that opportunity present itself?
Well, you know, again, you start putting some feelers out there for possible places where you could go and do something else. You know, at the time, I guess, you know, University of Alabama responded. That's how I ended up in Alabama in the first place. That's where I am. Well, I've lived here in Atlanta. I've mostly been in Alabama since then.
And what year was that you came over to the States?
Sometimes I'm almost embarrassed to say, but it's been almost about 10 years.
10 years. So that's 98.
Yeah, 98.
Wow. So you're one of the originators, not originators, but you're one of the old guard of immigrants.
The old guard?
Yeah.
Is that what you call now?
Yes, there's the old guard and there's the young Turks, the people who came post 2000.
Oh my goodness. So we're the old guard.
Pretty much. Okay, so what was it like the first few years? Were there a lot of Kenyans there already, or?
No, I mean, as you can probably expect, since we are apparently an old guard, there's quite too many of us. So here you are experiencing some major culture shock, and you don't have too many people to tell you what to do, where to go, how to behave, and not to stare. You know, of course, we actually did look like immigrants, like we've just been dropped off at the beach. I guess that's a better way of describing the old guard.
I
Yeah.
can imagine it must have been very, very, very difficult.
Ah, yeah, of course. Of course, it was difficult. There's no one to guide you. You know, at least now, for anyone else who comes here now, I mean, there are 1,001 people and 1,001 experiences to learn from.
So
Yeah. Well.
you arrived in 98 and Mashada got started in 99, is that correct?
99, that's correct.
So how did Mashada get started?
To be honest with you, Mashada was before the word blog ever came into play. It was more of a blog. It was more of a personal experiences website for myself at the time. And you know, at the time there's hardly anyone else doing similar kind of thing. And of course, you know, everybody starts sending in their story, one thing or another, just different stuff. And then before you know what, you're struggling to post all these stories, and then you know, after that, you just turn into a forum. Right, and that's what it's been ever since.
Was this on Blogger? What software was there
No,
for?
there was nothing like that back then. There's no Blogger software. There's no WordPress. I mean, all this stuff people have now. It wasn't there back then. All there was I'm not sure you remember. Was it tripod?
The only one I've heard of there is GeoCities, but Tripod, that one I've never even heard of that.
Okay. Those were the only things, because I mean, they weren't even blogs. All they were was just allowed you to create a simple website. That's all it was. I don't even think the term blogging had yet been invented.
So you just basically had crafted some HTML into a web page, started telling stories, and it just evolved from there.
Yeah. It's very simple. There's no content management system like WordPress. It's simple HTML, and that's how it all began.
And did Mashada grow, as in, was it very quick growth or was it over time?
You know, again, it's been around for a long time, and it's been what? I mean, it's been 10 years almost. So, I mean, as you can guess, it was progressive growth, and a lot of bloggers now started on Mashada before you know before the whole blogging thing came about. Like, I'm sure you read Thinker's Blog. Yeah, I mean, all these guys were former contributors at one point or another on Mashada. Yeah, before they realized they could create their own private space, which was what I planned in the first place for myself. Then was going to be a personal blog.
And you just helped other people start their own.
Yeah, but you know, which is a good thing. It's definitely a good thing because, like I said, just what Mashada has turned into was, I guess you could call it accidental.
It was because it was too much work, so I just thought, let them do it for themselves.
Yeah. It was just too much work at the time. You know, I figured why not start a forum? Forum is the easiest way for people to contribute in one place.
When did you start
Yeah.
monetizing Mashada?
I can't really say exactly when. I'm not entirely sure. You know, to be honest with you, it was not people. I mean, me going out and looking for whatever. People start saying, "Can I advertise this? Can I advertise that?" Before you know it, you have a whole bunch of people, and then you start. Okay, maybe I need to increase the price just a little bit
Because there are too many.
because it seems like we're running out of space to advertise. Because it was actually you can say pretty much that the Mashada was selling itself. So it you know, the plan was never to monetize again. You know, like I said, what it turned into was never planned.
And how have you seen it evolve over the last 10 years? What's the difference between Mashada when you started it and Mashada now?
I've had my own issues with Mashada as it has grown. The larger number of people that start to get on the site, the more difficult it becomes to manage it. Yeah, initially, it was just students and displaced Africans. So that's all it was. It was just students, displaced Africans. It was a very small demographic of people. Now, of course, it has evolved to where you have an age group of between 18 and 45. And, you know, everybody just has such varying opinions that it's a little tough to manage sometimes. But it's good. It's good. I mean, I'm not necessarily complaining, but it just means I have to adjust to it.
And what exactly happened the time when, because around, was it December or January of this year is when you shut it down?
You know, again, my shut has always been, you know, it has always been, I suppose you can call it democratic in some way. It has never really needed any kind of management. If people are really expressing what is going on the ground either in Kenya or abroad. And of course, I received criticism for that over the years, but, you know, I've always let it be a free speech website. The reason, actually, a lot of other sites have come and gone is because they have tried to control what they think needs to be said on the website, right? And again, I chose a different path. I've always let people say what they need to say, which is a double-edged sword, as we found out in December, because I don't think it has ever been that bad for a number of reasons. First, of course, the media blackout in Kenya meant that a lot of people are migrating online to find the news. And what these people didn't know is that a forum like Mashada is not exactly a reliable source of information, right? Because this is not verified news. So anyone could spread rumors. That's where all the trouble began.
People were pretty much, they were giving their imagined account of the truth.
Imagined account of the truth, and not just that, you're coupling that with someone who has the intent to spread ethnic vitriol on the website, you know? When someone realizes that, hey, this is a good, this is a microphone here, I can say something, a lot of people will hear it, especially now. Then of course, you have all these people crawling out of the woodwork from behind their computers. You know, it's cowardly, but no, again, what can anyone do?
Was it what was happening on Mashada that made you start Ushahidi, or how did Ushahidi get started?
The thing, Ushahidi started by chance. It was not what happened. I guess what happened is part of the events that led up to the creation of Ushahidi. The idea of Ushahidi originally came from Ori of Kenyan Pundit. I'm sure you're familiar with her blog.
Yes.
Yeah. She just she threw an idea out there. You know, I'm not sure how whether or not she expected the people in the blogosphere to respond or not. I guess she had an idea, and a friend of mine from Orlando, white African, calls me up and he says, "Hey, can we do this?" And you know, of course, coming from dealing with Mashada, I was more than happy to do something like this, because in a way, you know, it felt like you're kind of, you know, putting in your two cents. I'm not on the ground in Kenya, but it's the least that I could possibly do. So we put our, you know, combined our forces, and you know, Ushahidi was born. So Ushahidi was just meant to address that situation at the time. I don't think we had any plans of taking it any further than that.
And what did you model Ushahidi on, or was it just an entirely new idea? What was the creative process behind creating Ushahidi?
You know, we didn't model it on anything. You know, this Ushahidi came out of a need, trying to map violence. I don't think we even had looked at anything else before that. Mm-hmm. And about the same time, you know, Google, a few months before, had come out with the API for the maps.
Well, what is API? Just briefly explain, because even I'm not exactly sure what it is.
Okay. Okay, I don't get too technical about it, but basically, you know, there's Google Maps, and after Google created these maps, with a lot, you know, just like Google has done with other things, they've created an application programming interface, which is the API, which allows you to tap into their maps, you know, throw in all kinds of data, you know, mash it up with all kinds of things to your own use, you know, which in a way creates more value for them. Right, you're using it to visualize data for yourself, but you know, again, it gives Google Maps an even better, you know, there's more need for Google Maps to exist.
It's like open source Google mapping, basically.
Yes. Okay. More or less. You know, this is the day and age of RSS feeds and whatnot. You know, everybody, there's so much data flying around. And as long as you have open standards, you know, people can take this data and combine it into ways that make more sense for specific niches.
So Google has API. You've met with Eric from whiteafrican.com, and so continue.
So, you know, basically that was it. We used Google, and we created a method for people to get on the website and report incidents. When they reported an incident, any incident reported was, you know, appeared on the map. And it is so simple. It's such a simple idea, you know, because I mean, the process and everything is just wickedly simple. It doesn't take much effort to write something, you know, write a program that does what Ushahidi does.
Yeah.
So, you know, this, we put this thing together in, what, 2-3 days? And, you know, clearly you can see it worked. It was a simple tool that worked.
And how did you get the word out on the ground about it?
Now, you know, this is the point at which you realize the power of this blogosphere. You know, there are so many bloggers who have so many readers, people like yourself. Once these people, it's so easy for them because they're all connected to each other and they have so many readers. Word starts to get around from the blogosphere, it leaps out to, you know, just regular people getting on the web to just, you know, after that, now, you know, bloggers probably know people on the ground.
Yeah.
Know people at radio stations. And before you know it, it has gone from web just to the man on the ground. And that's when we implemented an SMS interface where people could send in reports via SMS.
Okay, so Ushahidi, after being used for the election violence, ended up in South Africa with the recent violence that was taking place there. How did that one happen? Did South Africans contact you, or you just sent it to them?
No, they actually, you know, they contacted, I'm not sure which one of us it was. I know it wasn't me, but I'm not sure which of us was contacted. I think maybe they just sent a general email to us through Ushahidi. And, you know, just wondering how we could incorporate what we had done as a South African website. Porting it to South Africa was a thing, you know, we did pretty much overnight. It was very simple.
It's actually, when I first looked at Ushahidi, I thought to myself, it looked like it was one of those things which had taken time and a lot of planning, and it would take a lot of, you know, effort to transfer, but it seems like it's like blogging, really. It's just, it can be cut and paste.
Yeah, to be honest with you, you know, like I said, it came out of an immediate need because we didn't have time to develop this thing, you know. Of course, it needed plenty of coffee of a few days.
Yeah.
And little sleep, but, you know, it didn't take too long. And that's why, you know, like I said, even the interface, as you look at it, it's very simple.
And to SMS in, is it at standard prices or...?
You know, there's no cost to, you know, it's like sending any other ordinary SMS.
Okay, and there's a verification process with Ushahidi. Who does that verification?
Now, you know, of course, verification, you know, that's probably been the number one question, right? And I figured you'd ask that sooner or later. Now, even before we created the site itself, that was one of the big things. You know, we had to make sure that people knew that these incidents that were being reported are either verified or unverified. And the site itself will, when you get on it, the reports are either marked as verified or unverified, you know, for various reasons. I mean, again, this is a tool that could be used the same way that Mashada was used on, you know, as a microphone for people to spread ethnic vitriol, you know what I mean? So, we, you know, again, and I have to say I'm very grateful for people in the whole blogging sphere, because a lot of these same people are the people that volunteered to verify some of these events. Then they could log back into the site and, you know, say, yes, this happened, or add more information to it, add photos, add links. And that combined with people like the AP, the Associated Press, you know, you can tie a specific incident reported to a news item, so that also verifies it.
Wow. Hey, as in that, I think that, listening to that, it's amazing. That was, it's really for us, by us type of project.
Yeah, so, it is. You know, our tagline has been crowdsourcing crisis information. You know, that crowdsourcing, that's exactly what it means. It means, you know, by us, for us.
Okay, so now Ushahidi started, it got into South Africa. And how is it doing in South Africa? How did it do mapping in South Africa?
It was the exact same way. You know, these guys pretty much took it was a cookie cutter situation. They just took what we had done, our experiences, our pitfalls, and they learned from that. And they did the exact same thing. It's just sourcing people on the ground, essentially. And I think they also incorporated the SMSs to some extent. For them, it was mostly a relief effort. It was not. It was not so. You know, it was not as political as ours. You know, for them, it had kind of happened. So the site has been used to get help for people and show people where they could get help.
And how did NetSquare, actually, what is NetSquare to begin with? Because I still don't fully understand.
NetSquare is you guys are very interesting. It's, I suppose they're tapping into people like us who, you know, are affecting social change through the web. You know, they contacted us about participating in NetSquare, along with other social groups that are doing, I won't call it exact same thing with us, but similar things.
So using the internet to help communities?
Pretty much. That's, you could put it that way. Competition of sites that are doing, you know, committed to social change through the web.
And when, how many sites did you compete against?
There were 20 other groups of people. You know, some of them were concerts also, and, you know, it's I think the theme is pretty much taking tools that are already on the web, like Google, for instance. And, you know, it's I think, I'm not sure I remember, but I think it was mashing up the web for social change. I think that was their basic theme, but there were 20 other groups.
And so, of course, you went and then you won the NetSquare Challenge. So now what are you going to do to expand to Shahidi?
Well, you know, I guess it's inadvertently it happened, you know, that Shahidi, and which was unplanned for, and the outcome was unplanned for. We didn't plan on having it go this far, you know. You know, again, we didn't plan on going to this NetSquare Challenge in Silicon Valley and winning. You know, once something like that happens, it speaks volumes. So, of course, the plan is pretty much crowdsource crisis situations again, and that's the software we're developing for the next phase of Shahidi.
And, okay, you also run something called Kobia Interactive. So what is Kobia Interactive?
That is basically, you know, the web development, software development, contracting company that I started a few years ago.
Is that your main bread and butter?
That is my bread and butter and has been. You know, I quit my job to do this full time.
What were you doing before that?
Before that, I used to work for a division of Time magazine.
Wow. How was it working at Time?
That is working for any... that is working for a corporation. You know, working for a corporation is the same. It doesn't matter which one you're working for. So I have plenty of red tape. This was AOL Time. AOL Time at the time. I think now they just changed Time Warner. And, you know, of course, these are the same guys that do CNN.com and AOL. And all these other big titles. So of course it was definitely an honor. It was a learning experience. It was good. I definitely can't complain about that.
Actually, I'd like to hear more about working in a corporation because personally, I never have. Neither have I really had ambitions. So I'm always interested to hear what it's like. Because I mean, as you know, growing up in Kenya, everyone wants to work in a corporation, yeah. And I was always that weird child in class who just had no ambition whatsoever. I always said that you'd be working in an office and I'd be the person outside with stones throwing them at the window. So I've always wanted to hear what it's like working in a corporation.
Well, you know, here's what working in a corporation is. And, you know, I don't mean to spoil it for you, but just try and imagine a cubicle with very bland colors. And that pretty much describes a corporation.
That's the metaphor for you.
if you've watched Office Space, then, yeah, you're on the right track.
Okay, so yeah. Is it that you became dissatisfied or you started working at Kobia Interactive while you were at Time?
No, I mean, the thing is, you start feeling like you could do a lot more. You know, working at a corporation, while working at this specific company was nice. It was very nice. It was a very good company. You start to feel like you're only contributing 2 cents, literally, you know?
Yeah.
When you feel like you could contribute a dollar. So, you know, again, that's how a corporation makes you feel. It makes you feel like you're just a tiny part of a big thing. And I just felt like, you know, maybe I could do more.
So, Kobia Interactive is, I'm assuming it's one of those where everything is online. You receive the work online, Or is it more, do you have an office?
No, I mean, I did have an office, but I don't anymore for a few reasons. I mean, number one, I've not met a lot of my clients. These people find me online through Google. Of course, my mom finds it, you know, difficult to understand. I've tried to explain that to her. You know, she's an original Monique, you know.
Yep.
Minus web.
Yeah. Yeah.
The whole concept is just too difficult for her to understand. That is, that we can work and get something done without ever meeting. But yeah, so I've been working on this the last few years.
Okay. And what are the hours like? Do you create your own hours, or is it, do you work the standard 8-hour day?
That's you know, that whole concept goes out the window once you get into it, because if you have deadlines, it means you work on a Sunday. That's the other thing about self-employment, I guess, is as much as you can try to set a rigid schedule for yourself, your productivity really just depends on you. So if you work best at night, if you work best in the morning, work best in the weekends, it's really up to you. So I'm very flexible as far as that goes.
Okay. And it's a sole entrepreneurship until now?
Yes.
And African Teas, how did that one get started?
Okay. African Teas is, you know, this whole T-shirt, the thing is, with T-shirts, that is a relatively easy business for anyone to start, I would think. And there are a lot of great T-shirts, Kenya, especially Kenyan T-shirt companies already online, like Jamhuri Wear. So African Teas was one of those things, trying to, you're looking for specific designs yourself. So you decide, hey, since these guys can't provide them, because, you know, my background has always been, it has been design. And these guys left me feeling a little bit hungry.
Jamhuri Wear.
I needed something, like Jamhuri Wear. And I know Kimathi from Jamhuri Wear, and he's done great things over the last few years. You know, I suppose there's always room for, this is a big pie, there's a little room for competition. It's a very simple concept. Just put up T-shirts, whatever people, and the idea is to turn over the designs based on popularity of a design.
Okay. And I've heard that apparently the margins in when you sell T-shirts are very, it's very automated and the margins are very small. Those are the two things I've heard about selling T-shirts online. Is that true?
That is actually the truth. The margins are very small. I don't think people realize sometimes just how tough this business can be, but you know, I think I've simplified it personally. Just, you know, I've tried to simplify this idea as much as possible. Just have as many designs as possible, and you just start to knock them off one by one, depending on supplies. And that way, you can kind of get a feel for what people really, really want. Which some of the T-shirt designers out there. Not, this is an issue they're not addressing. They're not turning over designs as much as I think they should.
Oh, and how many people submit designs? Is it mainly your designs, or do most of the designs come from the users, or?
A few people have submitted designs. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, before you can get people to submit designs, you have to show them that something is going on.
Yep.
So really, most of the designs on there are my designs. You know, if you look at them, you'll see that they're very, very simple designs, but I think they're very effective. Because I think Kenyans have, you know, just like people from any other country, have some pride.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not specifically buying a design, they're buying nationalistic pride, I think, you know.
So is there any other project you have apart from, so there's Ushahidi, African Teas, Mashada, Kobe Interactive. Is there any other that I've missed?
To be honest with you, if I got into anything else at this point, I don't think I'd be sleeping. That is more than enough. I
can imagine.
I'm grateful that everything is okay so far.
Okay, so in terms of a scale of what takes the most time, what takes the least, which one takes the least, which one takes the most?
Of course, Kobe Interactive puts bread on the table.
Mm-hmm.
But in recent months, though, you know, just because of the direction Ushahidi has taken, it looks like that has taken more time than anything, and it looks like in the near future that's where I will be devoting probably more than 80% of my time is developing this crisis software that I'm doing for Shahidi.
Yeah, I mean it's something new on the web with Shahidi, so it's one of those things where we could say a Kenyan created a brand new niche on the internet. You know, you created, you're like the WordPresser of something.
I know we're putting our stamp out there. We're putting Kenya on the map, and there's nothing that gives me more pride than.
What so in future you're pretty much dedicating your time to Ushahidi most of your time.
Yes, me and the other people I'm involved with, Eric from whiteafrican.com, Ori from kenyanpundit.com, and Juliana from Afromusing.
And you're all in the States. I'm familiar with her blog.
Okay, she is based out of Chicago. Of course, Eric, like I said earlier, is based out of Florida.
Uh-huh.
Ori is in Johannesburg.
Joburg?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Didn't expect that.
So as you can imagine, this is truly a web effort. We do everything via phone and Skype.
Okay. So if you what would you recommend for most Africans who want to use the internet? How would you recommend they spend time on the net? Because I mean, you've done a lot, you've seen a lot, you've been on the net for a while. So what do you think is the most productive way to use this thing called the internet?
Okay, that's a very broad question, but I'll try to answer the best I can. As far as Kenyans go, and let me just say Africans in general. I wanted to blog about this, this in the last week or so, was, I don't know if people realize that Africa has been experiencing 1,000% plus growth in internet reach every year. So, the numbers are still small compared to most other places, but it just shows that there's a lot of things that need to be done. I mean, we don't even have to develop essentially new ideas. All we have to do is take stuff that's already been done, improve on it, and just create it for an African market. Although the web is really global, there's no, sites like Facebook, social networks prove that you really don't have to target a specific niche. The social network creates itself, like an African network creates itself within a social network like Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So, besides that, I still feel like there's a lot of room for a lot of things to be done. The initial adopters, in my opinion, might get burnt, just like in the first people who started a lot of things on the web, but I still urge people to try and do it, because the benefits, there's a lot of benefits to be reaped in coming years with such growth coming out of Africa.
And barriers to entry on the internet, by they are very low compared to almost anything else. Let me just add that one. I mean, it's not, you don't need to buy an office. You don't, as long as there's a computer somewhere, the internet, you can at least do something.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many tools. That's what Google has going. Google Docs proves that you don't have to have Microsoft Office. Skype means it's easy to connect via phone and chat. There are so many tools that people can combine to make things happen.
And everything he's just mentioned is free. So I agree. There's so much on the internet that can be mixed and mashed and put together for a greater good.
Absolutely, and I don't think people realize that this is a golden age of the internet. I don't know what it's going to be down the road. Who knows what forces, government or capitalistic or otherwise, will come in. But there's a lot of free tools out there that people can take advantage of now.
Personally, I've been absolutely amazed by how much there really is that is still free and available and open. You'd think by now corporations would have clamped down and commercialized everything, but yeah. It's still amazing how much you can actually do just for absolutely free.
I know.
Okay, and I guess as a final one, assuming someone is now in Africa and they're about to come over to the States, What? Now that you've been there a long time, you're part of the old guard. What would you say to this young, fresh immigrant coming in? What the most important thing for them to keep in mind?
I think the biggest thing is to try and remain open-minded. I think that's the number one flaw with a lot of immigrants coming, you know, going to any country, you know, coming out west or out to Australia,
mm-hmm.
is the failure to remain open-minded. You know, people tend to form, you know, I almost feel like calling it a xenophobic group of people. Right?
Yep. Those people who meet to complain about what's wrong with everyone around them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The reason we are out here in the first place is to compete on a global level. And everything is there, you know. I think, you know, what I would say is the world is your pal, right?
Mm-hmm.
So people need to realize that and take advantage of it.
This has been the Displaced African podcast. The Displaced African is the African immigrant's personal development blog. You can find it at www.thedisplacedafrican.com.